The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Bob Herrig is one of the best when it comes to golf and writing on golf. And he's put together a book on Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. With it being open week, we are the only market in America that is not talking about the Super Bowl, because we're going to have almost a million people that show up at TPC Scottsdale. And that's how it is here. This is how we roll. Like, people are like, aren't you doing Super? No. In our community, when it is open week at TPC Scottsdale, that's what people don't say, are you going to the Super Bowl? And next year, when we have the Open and the Super Bowl, it will be the same way. This week will be all about being at golf. And Bob has put together a great book on Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. And what I would say is, it's one of these books that if you're a fan of golf or just a fan of sport, you should check out. It's called Tiger and Phil: Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. You can make the argument that Jack and Arnold, for some of you in this audience that are older, that would be your rivalry. You can make the argument for some of you younger in this audience that it's Brooks and Bryson. I would say Tiger Phil is gripping for, I don't know, most anybody who's looked at sports, if you're in your early 20s all the way into your 70s or 80s, to see what's been going on with those two. And Bob's written a book on it, and he will be zooming in with us here momentarily. And then Edgerrin James. Edge has put out a book on business, the former Arizona Cardinal, true character, part of the Super Bowl team, Edgerrin James. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. There's a lot going on tonight and today. We have the Suns at Chicago tonight. Chris Paul was saying yesterday we're on cruise control. I like that. Man, did they take Washington apart on Saturday night? That game was over by the opening tip. People weren't even in their seats, and that game was over. Chris Paul was saying afterwards, like, yep, we're on cruise control. This is what we are. This is what we do. And tonight against Chicago, Chicago's one of the best teams over in the East. Chicago's in first place in their division. But in the NBA, it's all about when you meet a team. And the Suns are meeting a Bulls team that put a lot out on the court last night. It's a back-to-back for Chicago. Suns should win. DeMar DeRozan, terrific player. Like, this will be fun to watch tonight, Suns-Bulls, as their road trip continues. And the Bucks are in town on Thursday night. And yes, I will be there for that. Tonight, I'm going to be at Arizona State. Look, U of A, ASU in basketball. Through the years, there's been moments, but by and large, it's usually a wildcat bloodbath. This year with Tommy Lloyd coming in, Tommy Lloyd deserves conversation for Coach of the Year, not just in the Pac-12, but for what he's done nationally. Tommy Lloyd has come to Tucson as a Gonzaga assistant, and they are rolling. They're probably a one seed right now if we're talking about the tournament, which is about a month away. We'll be in Las Vegas doing the show around the Pac-12 tournament and WAC tournament next month. Very much looking forward to that. It's always one of our signature events that we get out to. The Wildcats start four sophomores. When U of A beat ASU 9 days ago in Tucson, U of A had a decided advantage at the free throw line, more aggressive. Don't buy into this. It's because Bobby Hurley whines to the officials and all that stuff, and officials are tired of it, and so they're going to punish him like they did up at Stanford, where they were outshot 42-9 at the free throw line. If you're an Arizona State fan, that's a pretty easy narrative to go on, rather than U of A is just flat better. But I am one of those that, even though they're playing in a barn that Elvis played in back in the late 70s, it needs to be upgraded. Just, it's not even close how badly that facility is to being the worst within the Pac-12. Nonetheless, Saturday night, triple overtime, a great win for ASU over UCLA. Thursday night against USC, Sun Devils hung tough, played hard. They weren't the gritty little Sun Devils. They just lost to a better team by a few points. I'm seeing Bobby's team starting to turn the corner. This is why I'm one of those. And look, if you're a Wildcat fan, I get it. You love to point out to me that, yes, please keep Bobby Hurley in place. I'm still one of those that believes he's a very good coach. I do. He came here without very much experience. He's gotten better and better and better. There's times where the officiating gets the worst of him. Not the best, the worst. And he also has had a team this year that has had COVID. Their best player is not going to play this year. Bagley's not playing this year. He's not. That knee, if he were going to go, it's halfway through the conference season. He hasn't played one bit. You take U of A's best player off the floor, they're probably not where they are. It happens. But no. If you're a Cap fan, it's the Scum Devils. And if you're all the back and forth stuff, that's just nonsense to me. I'm not a part of it. Didn't go to either school. Don't care. All I look at is, are the two teams playing their best? In Bobby's case, his squad is starting to do this. It wasn't just beating UCLA. You could see it coming. There were glimpses and flashes to me that I was watching them play. It's like, okay, this is cohesive. I saw them in person against Grand Canyon. They weren't even close to being cohesive. They didn't know what they were. Starting to figure it out, midpoint of the season. I think tonight's going to be a very competitive game. I do. I don't know if, to me, competitive, good basketball. Someone's got to win. Someone's got to lose. The other night, if UCLA played ASU 10 times, they might win 8 of 10. I don't know. ASU made some poor decisions. UCLA made some poor decisions. They fought through it. They're college kids. They're not the most experienced teams. And yet the Sun Devils found a way to get a victory. So I'm expecting a good game tonight. I'm going to be there. It'll be fun. With it being Waste Management Open Week, and we love the golf scene here in Arizona. And as mentioned, there's not another place where there's going to be 750,000 to a million people that are going to come rolling in. And it's part of our community. Like the Fiesta Bowl has turned into this deal where they bring in a couple teams from out of state. It's not our event anymore. It's not. It's just kind of something to fill up some spaces in hotels in late December. And that's too bad. They've lost the community. They can say they have it. They don't. Just giving money away to teachers, nothing wrong with that, but you can't just put that as this is why we're all about community. There's other parts within our great state, within our community here, that I feel like they've completely lost touch with. The Waste Management Open has not done that. It's not a big corporate deal. Every corporation in town has a spot on either 16 or 17 or 18. And it's yet wide open enough and not exclusive enough that if you just want to go out with a ticket and walk out and walk around and find a hill to sit on or find a place to sit down, have a place to drink or eat, you can do it. Common fan is still part of it. So I love that about the Open. And for me, I'll be there tomorrow. Our good buddy Tim Ovick over at Santan Ford is the title sponsor tomorrow of the Special Olympics event. I've been going to that for 20 years. Larry Fitzgerald's going to be out there tomorrow with Michael Phelps doing some stuff over on the practice range. Been seeing that for a long time. Wednesday, Pro-Am Day, be a lot of fun. Check out people in different light, different space. Although I'm going to go Thursday. I'm supposed to go Thursday. I'm not sure I'm going to go. I'm going to go Saturday, probably go Sunday morning. Sunday morning is one of those times where you go out there to the Open. It's the final day. A lot of people are hungover. They party their tails off or they're getting their Super Bowl game together. And there's very few people out there, and you can move around. It's great. Me, Tuesdays, the best. Wednesdays, not bad. And then Sundays is where I like to go. And, you know, I can go the other times. And I'll go Saturday. Tomorrow night, we're going to an event with Troon, with Gary Woodland and Justin Thomas. Very much looking forward to that. So a lot of golf stuff going on this week that you'll see up on the site at sports360az.com. One other note. And I don't want this to get lost in our busy sports space. And it is over on the high school platform. Gary Ernst has been coaching high school basketball at Mesa Mountain View for 50 years. And he was pretty much dumped last week. And it was it's a story that Richard Ober did a nice job over at the Republic on. We have not done that much yet because I want to talk to Gary. But when I see someone who is the all-time winningest basketball coach in high school in Arizona just being told by a principal or an athletic director, whoever, an administrator, and the season is still going on, yeah, you're not coming back next year. And the coach said, can I have one more year? Nope, you're done. See ya. Where are we going here? There's a little bit more respect than just that. So the outrage over in the Mesa Mountain View community has been quite a bit, and I totally get it. And understand. All right, switching gears. Up next, we'll go to Bob Herrig and his new book on Tiger Woods v. Phil Mickelson. That is next, and then Edgerrin James. On a busy Monday, I'm Brad Susmat.
The football season rolls on. New users can bet $5 to win $200 in free bets if your team wins this week thanks to our partnership with DraftKings. Here's how to claim this offer. You sign up for a DraftKings Sportsbook account. That's easy. Make your first-time deposit of $5 or more. That's simple. Place a $5-plus wager on your football team, and if they win, you win $200 in free bets. That's right. Just go to dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Again, that's dkng.co/sports360. Act now. This offer won't be around forever.
All right, with it being the WM Open Week, formerly known as the Waste Management Week, we decided let's get Bob Herrig on. Bob Herrig is one of the best. Our great late friend Pedro Gomez said, if you ever want someone on golf, go get Bob, and I'll make it happen. And Pedro, because that's how his heart and soul was, lined up Bob for me a couple years ago now. Bob has left ESPN. He is now with SI.com. He has put together a book that will be must-read for many of you in this audience on the golf side of Tiger and Phil. The name of the book is Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. It comes out April 26th, but you can pre-order it now wherever Macmillan Publishing. How are you?
I'm doing well, and that was a nice mention for Pedro. It's hard to believe it's been a year.
Yeah.
So sad, and but thanks for that. Great guy, great colleague, and also I appreciate the mention of the book. It's exciting, so looking forward to the next few months as that's getting ready to come out.
The name of the book is Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. Bob Herrig with us, SI.com, for a few minutes. Why this book? Why now? And I would have to think in the last year with a car accident and Phil winning, this had to have been really a monkey at some point to wrap your arms around, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I mean, the idea was sort of born after Tiger won the Masters in 2019. And just a couple of colleagues of mine were kicking it around. And the idea would have been to try to get something out immediately, which was going to be difficult. And then the idea of Phil came up. And, you know, there's really not a lot been done on Phil. Actually, there's a biography of him by I'll give him a plug to Alan Shipnuck that's coming out later this year on Phil. But my book, it just sort of got to thinking nobody really tackled the idea of the Tiger-Phil dynamic. And I was sort of surprised that nobody had done that. And the timing was based on, okay, let's try to do this now. You know, in the aftermath, you're right. Tiger's car crash threw a loop into things because, you know, you could not ignore it. You couldn't write this book and ignore that. And obviously the book is going to come out and we're not really going to know what his future holds. And then towards the end of the writing process, Phil wins the PGA. And that became an entirely new chapter. You know, that was one chapter in its own. Of course, him winning his sixth major, becoming the oldest player to ever win a major, that's a pretty big deal, you know. And obviously, it kind of brought Phil's career full circle. And again, it gives you the chance to point out that, and I address this, you know, there's going to be people who argue that Tiger had no rivalry, or there was no rivalry. And it's a fair point if you just look at the numbers. But Phil was the next best, and Phil was a thorn in his side. And Tiger was the impediment to Phil taking off and blossoming. You know, Tiger had eight majors before Phil had one. It's incredible to think how Phil was a pro for a few years before Tiger turned pro. Tiger comes along, wins all these tournaments, wins eight majors. Phil doesn't have any. And yet Phil still went on to have a Hall of Fame career, won six majors. Nobody else currently today has won that many, obviously, other than Tiger. So I just sort of dealt with their career arcs all the way through, and it's fascinating how much they intersected.
With WM Open going on this week, we wanted to have Bob Herrig with us for a couple of minutes. Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating rivalry. Most all of us have one of these watches that keeps track of our steps. If you had one of these watches that kept track of the steps of Tiger's rounds and Phil's rounds that you, Bob, have walked through the years, what do you think the number would be? Guesstimate. Big guesstimate.
Oh, my goodness. 4 million steps, maybe? I don't know. Maybe that might even be light.
You've crossed the country with them walking back and forth.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times. I'm actually being serious about this. You've seen them play in person and walk courses dozens of times?
Absolutely. I would say it probably was more with Tiger than Phil over the years, but basically because you know, the way my career evolved, I live in Florida, Tiger's in Florida. Tiger played more in Florida than Phil did. Obviously, Tiger was probably the bigger story a lot of the time. Then there were all those times where Tiger was coming back from injury. I mean, just dozens of times where we just were curious to see every move that he made. You know, you were afraid that he could fall down at any moment. And so there was part of it was just you felt like you had to be there to witness it. You needed to be there just in case. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, I made a point certainly, with Tiger a lot of the time, I was going to walk at least 9 holes with him every day, sometimes all 18, sometimes the entire pro-am round, practice rounds. I did that numerous times with Phil also. Phil was really good about, and Tiger to a good degree too, about letting you talk to him, during a pro-am or a practice round for a few minutes here or there. You felt like you weren't really taking away their time because they had to be there anyway. They were going to be out there, and yet there's always going to be some downtime, maybe walking between shots or, you know, while they're waiting. And so those guys are really good about giving some time over the years during those moments. That's where I found to be the most effective.
How were they about giving time to you on this project, this book? When you went to them and said, or had to go to the reps and say, look, I'm thinking of doing this or I want to do this. Did you get good access, sit downs with Phil and Tiger to put this book together?
Unfortunately, no. In the case of Tiger, I didn't approach either of them until I was several months into the process. Part of that was is I was going to be researching their early years, talking to like their friends or colleagues from their junior and amateur and college and early pro days. And I just sort of felt that was important to get that part of the project going. And it was, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of phone calls and research to do. And so I waited until later in the process to approach either of them. Also, what held me up on that was the pandemic. And, you know, I started this in the spring of 2020, right around the time we all shut down when golf went away. So there was 3 months of no golf tournaments. Then when golf did come back and I did start to go back out, we really couldn't get close to them. Mm-hmm. We were not allowed inside the ropes. We were not allowed inside a locker room. Our interview times were in groups. It just wasn't conducive to telling them. And I had this goal of telling them each personally. So the first time I had a chance to actually bring this up with any of Tiger's people was at the father-son tournament with his son, Charlie, not this past one, but the 2021. And even there, I really couldn't get close to Tiger. So I told one of his representatives who told me, you know, look, Tiger's working on his own memoir. He's contractually not allowed to help anybody else with a book. You can probably get him at times, you know, I didn't get the sense that Tiger would decline me asking him a question here or there. But of course, that was the last time I saw him in person until this past December when he played the next father and son, because a couple months later he had the car crash and then all of that sort of went out the window. With Phil, I didn't get to see him in person until the Players Championship last year, last March. So all that time went by. I saw him in person in 2020, but again, the timing wasn't right. And when I finally got in front of him, I had already let his attorney know. So Phil knew. He didn't seem upset by it. He seemed to try to make time for it to happen, and it never happened. You know, like it just it kept getting put off and get getting put off. And that's unfortunate because I think there are some things that he could have addressed. You know, obviously they're both quoted throughout. They've done hundreds upon thousands of interviews and many of them my own. And so obviously I drew back on that. From points in time, I used their quotes at those times. But there was a few instances where Phil might have given some perspective that would have helped. You know, I had to do it without them. And you know, a lot of types of these books, that's how it works. You know, you talk to all the people around the story who were there, witnessed it, saw it themselves. And in some ways, that's just as good.
Who was the hardest person to get for this book that you felt could really give it context?
I don't know if he was so hard to get, but it took me a little while to get Hal Sutton. And if you know the story of the 2004 Ryder Cup, yep. I sort of used that as a launching point for maybe the height of their, I don't know if it was animosity, but just the fact that they did not get along, you know, that they were not buddies. That was the height of the tension. If there was tension, is in 2004, you know, Tiger and Phil, Tiger had you know, had won the eight majors to that point, and Phil had just won the Masters that year, and Tiger didn't have a great year, so he was not really that willing to be friendly with Phil at that point. And so, anyway, it evolved into, you know, Hal Sutton being the captain that year was an important get. Mm-hmm. And he was very, very good. I mean, very, very honest. That whole thing really hurt him. I mean, it hurt his career. He was criticized profusely for putting them together for two matches at that Ryder Cup. So I eventually got him, but it took me a little longer than I would have thought. You know, I talked to like all kinds of people, you know, Steve Williams, Tiger's old caddy. He lives in New Zealand. I mean, it wasn't that it was difficult in terms of that he didn't want to do it. It was just more making it work. You know, right. And all the various, you know, entities in the game, you know, I talked to, you know, people they played with over the years. I mean, Tiger's first professional round in 1996 at the Greater Milwaukee Open, he played with a guy named Jeff Hart, you know, who's now in his early 60s, you know? And so, you know, you're trying to track down a guy like that. He actually played in the 2020 PGA Championship because he qualified as through the Club Pro avenue. And, you know, he had great insight into what it was like that very first day Tiger stepped between the ropes.
If people pick up this book, what are they going to get out of it?
I think they will, if they didn't know already, they will be just reminded of how great these guys have been. Were, however you want to phrase it. Mm-hmm. And really going all the way back, Phil was incredible as a young kid, junior player, amateur, before anybody ever heard of Tiger, you know? And I think that, you know, if you're under 40, you might not realize that. You might not know that, you know, Phil was incredible as an amateur player. He won a tournament as an amateur. Mm-hmm. In 1991, he won the Tucson Open. Tiger never sniffed a PGA Tour win as an amateur. As great as Tiger's amateur career was, he won three straight U.S. amateurs. He also won three straight U.S. juniors before that. It's an incredible accomplishment. But Phil won a tour event as an amateur, as a junior in college. Phil won three NCAA titles in 4 years. Phil also won a U.S. amateur. Tiger won one NCAA title, won obviously the three U.S. amateurs, but never did better than 22nd in a pro event as an amateur. Wow. So like there is an argument to me being made, not knowing what we know now, that Phil might have been the better pro given his amateur success. And then you take it all the way through. You know, there was some, I think there's some moments that people will see might find as funny or humorous, the little dissing that went on behind the scenes. You know, some of the angst between them, but yet Phil pretty much always remaining deferential almost the entire time. I mean, for it's hard to find an example of Phil actually being negative towards Tiger. He saw what he did for the game. He feels that it helped make him better. He wonders maybe how his career might have been different if there had been no Tiger. But for the most part, it's all positive. Tiger wasn't so much that way early on. It got more that way as they got older and mellowed.
Will they ever play again, do you believe, in the same tournament together?
That's a really good question. I mean, I get the sense that Tiger wants to try. But he was very honest about it. Look, I'm never going to play a full schedule again, probably nothing close to it. Okay, that's great. But can he get to the point where, he could play 5, 6, 8 tournaments a year? Does he want to? I don't see Tiger going out there to shoot 77, 78 and miss a cut. I think he's going to want to be somewhat competitive. I also don't think he wants to have ended the way it did. So, if he never plays a tournament again, his last official tournament will be the 2020 Masters, where it was in the fall. It was, the circumstances were weird. He made a 10 on the 12th hole, then came back and birdied 5 of the last 6, which is an incredible feat, actually, given that he had no chance at that point. I think he'd like to get back there again. I think he'd like to get to the Open. I think there's some tournament golf he'd still like to play just to show that he can do it. And certainly I think Phil will be around for a lot of that. I don't see why Phil wouldn't play in majors and some of these other events, here. He's not really shown many signs of slowing down, even though he's not been performing as great of late.
Bob's book is called Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. It comes out April 26th, but you can pre-order it now. Bob Herrig, you can find his content at SI.com. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
All right, let's take a minute here to talk about DraftKings. This is important, guys. The football season is rolling on. New users can bet $5 to win $200 in free bets if your team wins this week, thanks to our partnership with DraftKings. Really happy to have them on board. Here's how to claim this offer. Sign up for a DraftKings Sportsbook account. Make your first-time deposit of $5 or more. Place a $5-plus wager on your football team, and if they win, you win $200 in free bets. It's that easy. Just go to dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Again, that's dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Act now. This offer won't be around forever, thanks to DraftKings.
All right, as promised, it's Edge. Edrin James. One of the greatest Hall of Fame speeches I have ever seen. Former Arizona Cardinal went to the Hall of Fame last August and had so much words of wisdom. And he's written a book, and it's, correct me if I'm wrong on this, it's great to see you, one, but this book, From Gold Teeth to Gold Jacket, it's business and football, or football and business, Edge? Where are you at on this book?
Well, I think they run parallels. I think football is business. Football is life. And so I made sure to make the comparison, but you can see the whole path throughout my walks in football that actually can help anybody or kind of resonate with many people that's actually dealing with business, because football is business, especially when you get to the NFL.
When did you first decide to do a book, and why do a book?
Well, I decided to do the book once, I guess, the mission was complete. It's one of those things you set out to do to become a Hall of Fame football player. And I couldn't close that football chapter until I actually reached that milestone. And to actually receive the gold jacket, I think it's time. You have the whole story. You have the front and the back. So everything's covered now from the beginning all the way to the end.
When did business start to become on your radar? As a kid? I mean, when did you start having business acumen about the whole deal that you were involved in?
Well, at a young age, you start learning business. My grandfather was a contractor, and he's always dealt with different people. And for myself, you start to be around those things, and then you start looking at sports. And once you leave college, you realize, hey, it's no longer the childhood game that you play that's strictly for fun. you know, now it's really strictly business and it's strictly for funds with a D, you know. So it's, you know, it changes, you know, it goes from fun to funds. And the NFL is a serious business. And anybody that plays in the league long enough, they're going to really understand business and hopefully they end up on the right side of it.
When you see name, image, likeness in this day and age with college kids, if they had NIL when you were back in the day, maybe they had NIL, we just didn't know about it. I don't know. But, you know, Charles Barkley gives me the greatest line ever, Brad. He said, I took a pay cut when I went to the NBA. But, you know, in all seriousness, NIL in this day and age, just on a business side, when you see what's going on with college players today, and even some high school kids wanting to get involved in NIL, what do you make out of it, Edge? Or have you followed it that closely?
Yeah, I actually speak about that in the book. You know, I speak about that because, you know, I think it's a serious topic. I have two sons that are they're in college. One in college, one's going to college. And you have to be aware of everything that's going on. So I make sure that I'm aware of it and kind of know the rules. And for a parent that has no idea about this stuff, I think it could go left easy, you know, because when you start talking about your personal needs, the things you need, especially in sports. In sports, we have, you know, have a lot of kids coming from, you know, tough situations. And those situations could dictate a decision, you know, and an uninformed decision. So the rules, they're not that clear. I think it's a slippery slope. I think there's gonna be benefits to some, but I think it's gonna do some damage also, because you think about the hunger you have. I look back at myself, if there was an NIL during those times, you know, are you gonna skip out this workout to go do this interview or to go do this photo shoot? You know, are you gonna, you know, go on this vacation? Is the hunger gonna be there? You know, are you turn into a celebrity? You have potential to make more money than the people that's actually teaching you and coaching you and the guys that's pushing you. And for some guys, you know, it could go wrong. But if it's done right, I think it could be a great tool. It's like fire, you know, it can warm you, it can burn you. It depends on how you use it.
Very wise words there, because I see players at the college level that are just chasing the NIL, which really is pennies, but they may need the money now. I get that. Versus, guys, if you just grind for 2 years and you get to the league, you're going to make that money exponentially. So the hunger that you talk about, I think the outside voices on the college player with NIL sometimes gets distracted and it's mixed messaging.
I agree. Absolutely.
Edrin James with us for a couple of minutes. Why don't you put that book right in front of the camera for a second, just so people can see it. It's called From Gold Teeth to Gold Jacket. There it is. It comes out right before the Super Bowl, but I'm sure you can pre-order it. Edrin James, not just a Hall of Fame running back, but an author now. That's pretty cool.
to add another title to your name. It's like somebody going to get a PhD. You're just adding layers. It's just another layer. And for me, it's just really getting a chance to show, you know, the kids or the younger kids that, hey, there's more to it than just playing sports. There's more to it than just going to college. You know, there's so many other things you can attain that's possible and that's out there. And for me, this is something that I've added to all the major things or all the many things that I've accomplished. And to be able to put a book out there, that's a big deal, because I love to read books, but to be able to walk in a bookstore and, you know, see your name on a book, I think that's pretty dope.
That is really, really something. If someone does buy this book, what are they going to get out of it? What do you hope they get out of it?
Well, I think hopefully they'll see themselves at some point in time in the book, because it covers a wide range of topics. You know, it covers a lot, and especially athletes that's actually playing the game. And if you're a fan, when you look at this, when you read this book, you're going to get a great appreciation for the things we've done, or especially when our time at the coach, you know, the work we put in, you know, we speak on those things. And then you hear from a bunch of different players, coaches, you hear from the owner, you hear from them in their words. So I try to make it a timeless book, something that people can resonate with, because I look at the things that have been going on year in and year out, you know, so a lot of stuff is repetitive, you know, and you want to see, okay, how can I help change the narrative? How can I help, you know, bring awareness to certain situations?
Stuff that you would have seen as a 16-year-old, you may say, man, if I just would have had somebody tell me this, now that I'm out of the game, I would have, should have, could have, right?
Yeah, I think when you look at some of the things that we talk about in here, I think you get a greater appreciation for the person. And when you see people that drive, you see a person that's hungry, and you see the things you go through to attain certain things, to be an NFL player, to actually get there, that's one thing. But to stay there, that's another thing. To make it to the Hall of Fame, that's another thing. To actually be successful financially when that career is over, that's another thing. There's so many layers to it. You know, some people, you know, their ceiling is not high enough, you know, and they'll sit up there and settle. They'll say, hey, I made it to the NFL. It was great. And they'll ride that out. And they feel like they've accomplished what they set out to accomplish when there's more to it. And I always want to show that there's more to it than just getting there. There's more to life than just doing that. And also, you know, I speak on being a parent, you know, because we all have to go through these same things. You know, you didn't have to play football to talk about your children. So I always talk about my children. You know, I talk about every facet of life that I could. You know, you wish you had more time. It may need a part two because it's so much information, but it's condensed.
It's really smart. Hall of Famer Edgerrin James with us. Before I get you out of here, here's what I see of players that are done with their careers. Most of them are not sitting across from me with a book and speaking words of wisdom about finance, family. A lot of them are still trying to find the rush of running out on the field in front of 70,000 people and having this car for free or that meal for free. And some are lost souls, quite frankly. The period of adjustment for you when you left the game, was it a struggle at all for you before you entered the Hall of Fame?
No, it never was a struggle for me because I knew my purpose before I got there. You know, before I got to the NFL, I understood that football is just a vehicle to get me where I'm trying to really go. You know, I've always wanted to be in business. I always wanted to lead by example. And we see a lot of the guys that kind of go through things. You have to understand the why. You know, the why is it's like you committed your whole entire life to being the best at what you're doing. And then with what you're doing, it's kind of the job's not available no more. Now you're back in the real world. And I think anybody would struggle when it's something, when they have to just, hey, I got to get out here and do something.
Hold up from under them. Yeah. Yeah.
It's totally different. So yeah. I think when people get a clear understanding of the athlete's point of view and the reason why athletes are put in that situation is because you have to think there's so much pressure to perform at a high level, to go out and give these fans the best game or everything you have. You have to give it everything you have. And if you're giving it everything you have, I mean, you're slacking in other areas. So it's not as easy as people think to find that balance. And for me, you know, I went into it for football. You know, I love playing football, but I love business more. So my priorities were a little bit different. And that helped me with the transition because it was an easy transition for myself because I knew what I was there for.
Before I get you out of here, the time with the Cardinals, I remember at the Super Bowl, was it a white? What was the car you drove up in?
The Lamborghini.
Yeah.
The white Lamborghini.
Yep. I'm standing there waiting for you to show up. I've got my cameraman, and here comes Edge, and you know, the white Lamborghini pulls up, and you hop out. You had fun at that Super Bowl. You had fun with the whole process when you're here in Arizona. It looked like
You know, when man, I enjoy life. You know, I don't let life bog me down. I don't take nothing too serious. You know, once I get an understanding of what I'm doing, I'm going to make the best out of it. You give me 2 hours to go have fun, I'm going to go have 2 hours of fun. You know, I'm not going to just sit there and wait on somebody else to tell me what to do. You know, I'm going to make the most out of it. And that's what I did when I was in Arizona. You know, Arizona, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have no family or anything. But within a couple of weeks, within a couple of months, you know, I was around the city just like I had been there for years, you know. So it's one of those things where I'm going to make the most out of it because I know where I'm coming from. And where I'm coming from, you don't have these opportunities. So I embraced those opportunities. I loved Arizona. It was beautiful weather, beautiful city. And to go there to a franchise that wasn't one of the most popular, that wasn't known for winning, and helped shape that franchise and turn it around, you know, that's a great feeling to even make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Fans loved you here. Your time was short, but you left a lasting imprint, and that's what it's all about in life. I appreciate the time and good luck on the book, and we hope to see you back here in Arizona sometime doing something. All right.
All right. Okay. I'll see you out there.
There's Edgerrin James. Why don't you push that book out one more time, Edge, and we'll say goodbye off that. The book. There it is. That Hall of Fame speech was something. Something
Thank
to
you.
This day.
I appreciate that.
You were real and just beat people right between the eyes. So there's Edgerrin James.
You.
From gold teeth to gold jacket, the Hall of Fame running back, former Arizona Cardinal and Colts. Get his book. It's out now. We're back after this time out.